Plundergrounds, Episode 124. Why are superheroes interesting?
Plundergrounds, Plundergrounds, welcome back to a brand new show. Ray's gonna take you where you didn't know you wanted to go. Fantasy and dungeon delve, science fiction, watch yourselves!
What makes superhero stories interesting? That's a question I haven't always been able to answer. And I still think I wrestle with it even today. I grew up not reading a lot of superhero comics. The comics that were left to us in a big trunk by my uncle were Western comics and war comics and Uncle Scrooge and things like that. And while I enjoyed a lot of those, they weren't really superhero comics. There was only a handful of superhero comics in the whole trunk. It's like an army footlocker. So you can imagine hundreds of comics and like maybe six of them were superhero comics. There were a couple Fantastic Fours. There was an early detective comics that featured the 101 Batarangs of Batman or something like that. And there was an early appearance of the Incredible Hulk. He was still gray. Most of those comics were trashed even by the time I got them, so don't regret, you know, that they probably don't even exist anymore. If they do, they were always in bad shape. They were just reader copies. So we had a good time reading those. I can remember this was before the age of seatbelts, right? And we'd take vacations up to, well, we had seatbelts. Nobody used them, and it wasn't illegal to not wear them. But we would take these vacations up to Minnesota and Canada to go fishing, and my brother would lie on the back seat, and I would lie on the footwells, and we had a big stack of comics, and we'd read comics like most of the way there. But I was more of a book reader always, and I can remember my D&D group. I was kind of the guy that got everybody into D&D, me and my friends. But long about the early 80s, they discovered the Marvel superhero game that was based on the Phase Rip system. And one of them brought it into the gaming circle and said, hey, let's play this Marvel game. And I kind of looked at it sideways because I didn't really know anything about the superheroes beyond like what their powers were. And there were a lot of them I just never heard of before. I didn't know hardly anything about the X-Men at the time. And I just kind of felt a little put off by it. And I guess, I don't know if it was a passive aggressive thing or whatever. But in the end, I just said like, hey, that's cool. Whenever you guys want to play superheroes, you know, you can just do it. And I'll just go do something else, right? Like just let me know that that's what you're wanting to play that night, and I don't know why I didn't invest in their fun. It's kind of a dick move, but you know, I just wasn't connecting with it, and so maybe it was better that I walked away instead of sitting at the table and being aggravated. But the best thing would have been for me to go, you know what? If you think it's fun, I'll trust you. Let me sit down and have some fun with you. But hey, I was I was like a early teenager at the point, or preteen even maybe. So I can't blame myself too much, but not real proud of it either. The next time I really connected with comics was in the early 90s. I was in grad school and met a friend there was this woman that I used to go to grad school with, and her husband became a good friend of mine, still is a good friend of mine. His name's John Oak Dalton. He writes scripts for direct to streaming or direct to DVD horror movies. Has been doing that for a number of years, and he just got through directing one. Actually, two recently. The first one was called Girl in the Crawl Space, and I think you can find it on Amazon Prime. Just keep in mind, it's a very low budget, shot in a weekend kind of movie, right, around his hometown. And I think for that, it's really amazing. There are times that it involves D&D, let me put it that way. Either they don't say D&D, I don't think, but they're playing a role-playing game. And so I have sort of a cameo in a way because some of my drawings are laid out on the table. But I did not get a chance to be in the film. I was thousands of miles away when that happened. I wasn't invited in any case. I'm not an actor. So that was pretty cool, and but he had a public access television show with his friend Doug about comics, and I remember kind of wanting to be into comics at that point to have another thing to talk with him about. And I remember picking up, you know, Arkham Asylum and early Sandman and some other really good comics, but I still just somehow, like, I would go sideways and end up in weirder spaces. And I just was never really connecting with the superhero comics. Sandman was kind of closer, right? And then I ended up on reading things like, you know, independently created, like Beautiful Stories for Ugly Children, I think was one of them that I read a lot. And well, I just never really got into superhero comics again, kind of sort of missed that opportunity. Then in 97, 98, He and I and a couple other people went to Gen Con together in Milwaukee, and in 98, that was the year that Wizards of the Coast had bought TSR and was still running TSR as TSR. And they introduced this new version of the Marvel Super Heroes game based on the Saga system. Now, this was a card-based game that had been developed for Dragonlance, but retooled and I think made much better for Marvel Superheroes. And I thought, let me give it, you know, this time when everybody said we want to play as superheroes, I said, yeah, I'm in. Let's, you know, let me figure out what's good about this. And so we all bought this game and took it home, and we played it for several years after that. We played a lot face-to-face, but we also played online. We had a forum and a website that I had designed called the Centurions, and we had Team Canada and the West Coast Centurions and the East Coast Centurions. And so each of us would GM a different team and play characters in the other team, and there was, I don't know, maybe 16 to 20 people, many of whom we didn't know. They just found us online looking around, and we played that game for almost 3 years online, and that was pretty cool. I still have all the website files somewhere so I can resurrect it at some point. But I still don't know that I got what was great about superheroes. Well, I was rereading the book. I should say that, like, in the last couple of years, I've had more reading experience with comics than I have in a long time, maybe ever. Angus, my buddy, was talking about his sort of experience with comics and how he'd like to, see more of the ones that he's missed that were the good ones. And I said I would absolutely like to really try graphic novels again and get invested and try to figure out what it is that's great about this storytelling medium that I'm missing. And so we decided to read one graphic novel every month, and that became Kirby's Kids. So you can hear Kirby's Kids as a podcast. There's also Space on MeWe where we discuss some of these comics. And we choose one a month, and we've been doing that and reading them and discussing them. We've been doing that for a little over 2 years now, right around 2 years. So that's been really good. We've read a lot of really solid graphic novels, and some dogs too. But it has taught me a little more about superhero stories. And this weekend, when I was rereading the Marvel superhero adventure game Core Rules, I ran across a section that kind of brought home some of the tropes to me, and I wanted to talk about that section of the book. The section of the book that I want to talk about is called The Contradictions of Heroism. And these are really the elements of the genre as they pertain to specific superheroes, regardless of era or type of superhero or whether they're solo or part of a team. I just think these are really interesting contradictions that they bring up. The first one is kind of obvious. It's great power and great responsibility. We've all heard this line in Spider-Man, with great power comes great responsibility. And it's the idea that you've been given a gift as a superhero that makes you more than human. It's a special gift, and it should be used in a special way to do special things. It shouldn't be taken for granted. The next one is popularity and fear, which is an interesting one to think about, because as these superheroes become iconic, as people want to invoke their names and their images and, you know, talk about them, at the same time, they become ostracized, right? And so even if you are a superhero standing next to a quote-unquote normal person who likes you, they're going to be starstruck and, you know, a little nervous, and also, you know, nervous in a way that you're a rogue element. They're not really sure what you're going to do, or if they're confident in you, they're not really sure what kind of danger you might draw to you. You know, villains are chasing you, and as a bystander, as a quote unquote normal person, as a helpless person, if you will, you're going to get caught up in something. And so I think that one's a neat one. You never really fit in anymore, right? You're popular as all get out, but you don't really fit in. The next one is vigilanteism and the law, which is pretty self-explanatory. You know, this idea that if you are out for justice, that there's times when the law's hands are tied and you have to decide what your role in that is going to be and how far you can push it, and under what circumstances is it okay for you to inflict some kind of karmic justice on the villains. Another contradiction is violence and restraint. This one is about the methods that the villains use versus the methods you can use, in a way. And you think about watching villains do violent things to you and the ones you love and innocence. But when you get them in your grips, you know, if you've got your hands around their neck, you can't just strangle them. Or you can, but that would be a lack of restraint, and it would make you less than a hero in a way. So you have to know when to pull your punch and turn them over to the authorities, that kind of thing. Honesty and masks. This is a good one. When you think about, I'm not sure where honesty fits in per se. I mean, I feel like superheroes want to be authentic. They want to have a good reputation, right? Be a person of their word, somebody who's reliable, who comes when there's danger, who tells the truth, who works with law and order. But at the same time, you're wearing a mask and you're sneaking around and you're keeping your identity secret. And there's kind of a weird contradiction between being thought of as a transparent and honest person, but also someone who wears a mask and doesn't tell your real name. Personal reward and charity is one of them listed. This one I think is a little weaker, but it's the idea that you don't use your powers for personal gain, and that means sometimes making big sacrifices. Like, it's kind of hard to pay the rent, but you don't necessarily go out and use your superpowers to pay the rent. You're using your superpowers for other things. And I still think that kind of goes back to the responsibility and power. You know, great power comes great responsibility, but you know, it's a little different. Uniqueness and teamwork is a cool contradiction. You see this one a lot in comics like the Avengers, because every character has their own way of doing things. They're their own boss. They're heavily autonomous loners, right? But then they have to work as a team. They have to learn to set each other up and support each other and be worried about each other's feelings. And that's not really natural when you're a superhero. High power and high risk. I suppose that one is probably, again, self-explanatory. I would think of it as somebody like Jean Grey. You know, some of the characters that have the most superpowers are the ones that are most at risk, or the more you use your power, the more you're at risk. So, or the more you risk in using it, if that makes sense. Those are pretty neat, I thought. It was a good set of things for me to think about as I'm putting together different ideas for scenes and villains and scenarios I'm going to throw the characters into. I'll be looking to try to hit at least two of these with every, right, to hit two of these contradictions with every scene. That way I can target various characters with some of these contradictions and make these. I think at the very essence of these is the painful choice, right? So you look at any one of these contradictions and you say, and you can turn it into a painful choice. Popularity and fear. Let's try to turn that one into a painful choice. Maybe you get a chance to finally date the girl that you've, or the guy that you've been hungering to date for years, right? As your real self. And you would like to have the popularity of your superhero self along with, you'd like to reveal that. But if you do reveal that, then you are, and the minute you reveal that, you would actually cause fear, right? Because you've been lying to this person, or you've been hiding something from them, and they would think you're strange. And so that's kind of a painful choice, right? Maybe the date's not going so well and you present them with a choice like, well, you could always reveal what you do, you know, see how that goes. Yeah, that's, I don't know if that was an interesting one or not. Vigilanteism and the law makes an easy, hard choice. Honesty and masks is another one where you might be dealing with somebody you care about, or somebody that wants an assurance that you're telling the truth and wants you to remove your mask to as a show of faith, right? And you have to choose either to go it alone and not have their help, or to actually be vulnerable in that moment. So that would be kind of a neat, hard choice. Well, those are the contradictions of heroism from the Marvel Superhero Core Rulebook. This book was written by, let me come back, it's Mike Selinker, I think. Yep, Mike Selinker. The system was designed by William Connors, though, so the saga rules were designed by William Connors. And it says, Game Design and Development, Mike Selinker. Does it tell who actually wrote this thing? Not really. It's hard to say. Skip Williams is mentioned in here as a contributor. Steven Stan, exclamation point Brown, Steve Shind, Bill Olmsdahl, Michelle Carter, Penny Williams, some other people named. But the two big names are Mike Selinker and William Connors, as far as big in, meaning the ones that were most heavily involved in this text. Pretty good stuff. It's actually a pretty good read. There's a lot of repetition, but I think it's because it was so far ahead of its time that it didn't really know how to portray some of these things. Just having all character facing card play, for instance, or roles, if you will, was a really new thing at that time. I'm sure there were other games that did it before, although I can't think of any. And I remember being kind of blown away when I picked up this book and was trying to figure out how it worked, that it just it was hard to get. And I think it doesn't help that it kind of explains itself two and three times, that, explains the same thing two and three times in a slightly different way. And I've caught things in it that it isn't very explicit about that you have to read into the examples to get that would have been better spelled out. So I'm not saying it's the best written book ever, but it does have some really good stuff in it. So I'll be keeping you all apprised of how the superhero stuff goes. If you've got any advice for me, I'd love to hear it. I am not, despite playing it for about 3 years back in the 90s, the late 90s and early 2000s, I would not consider myself an experienced GM of superhero role-playing games. I'm not really afraid of it at all. I know the system well enough that I know that I can, use most of my brain for storytelling, and that the cards drive a lot of story because they have events listed on them that you can bring in, and the characters are going to drive a lot of story because they'll have personal agendas. And I think it's much more incumbent upon you as a superhero character to bring more character to your character, if that makes sense. You can be a murder hobo in D&D, but you can't just be I don't think you can just be a vigilante or whatever in a superhero game. You have to have more to you. There has to be several layers to you. And obviously you can make that up as you go. It doesn't mean having a big backstory ahead of time, but it does mean that you have to kind of be ready to reveal different things about yourself or be confronted with painful choices like the ones we talked about in gameplay. So I'm not too worried about that. I figure it'll be fairly easy to feed off the characters, and I've got some ideas for villains and for some plots that, and not plots, I should say, but villainous plots, their agenda that if the characters don't get involved in things that they'll do or things that they would do to try to stop characters. And so it's going to be fun, but I could use some advice. So if you get a chance, call in and tell me what you would do with a superhero game. I've got two really good call-ins I wanted to play. The first ones are from the Lonely Adventurer, who does the Camping with Owlbears podcast. I'm actually starting after the first call-in. We're just going to jump in at the second one, where he talks about World War I movies and documentaries, and he kind of flips the tables on me a little bit between 1917 and They Shall Not Grow Old, and talks about why he likes the former better. And he really does a good job, I think, makes some really strong points. So I'm not going to have anything to add afterwards other than that. I think he made great points about those movies, and here's what he has to say. You'll notice at one point he says, "Don't." He asked me not to play all his emails because he doesn't want to feel like he's taking over the cast. But it's just three of them, so I don't think he needs to feel like he's overstaying his welcome. Here we go.
Oh, and I also saw 1917 this weekend. I agree that the story was pretty standard, but I thought it was competently done. I think it was more about the I think the filmmaker's goal was more about the cinematography, which was amazing, and just that level of complete immersion into an experience like that. There's no dramatic music. There's no satisfying payoff at the end. It's just he did what he had to do, and then everyone's ignoring him because that's how real life tends to work. He did his job, and great. He got a little pat on the back from one of the officers, but that was about it. And then it just sort of leaves you there. He's still in that terrible situation. You don't know how it's going to resolve in the long term. So I don't know. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was pretty great. And I actually enjoyed it more than They Shall Not Grow Old, which I'm running out of time, so I'll come back in a second with that. So I accidentally purchased They Shall Not Grow Old while exploring my options on how to view it on Amazon. So that was $15 I didn't want to spend. It was okay, but the only thing that stuck out as interesting about it to me was the way they changed the speed of the film to make it look more natural, to make it more, which made it obviously more immersive and relatable. But I didn't think the coloring was very impressive. There was no story. It was just clips of people talking, and most of that I've heard before in other documentaries. If you want a really great World War I series, The Great War was a TV series from 1964. It was a partnership, again, the Imperial War Museum, who I think was on this one too, BBC, Canadian Broadcasting Company, and maybe Australian Broadcasting. And it's 26 episodes. They're all at least an hour long. So obviously it goes into more depth, but running out of time again. Sorry. Okay, please, please don't play all of these back to back. I hate feeling like I'm monopolizing someone's podcast. But yeah, the Great War series. It's definitely a product of its time. It's got some interesting colonial outlooks on things. Talks about, you know, the martial races and stuff like that. It's a little systemic racism going on that I don't think even the show producers or the narrator is particularly aware of. But I think it's a great comprehensive look at the Great War, and the material that they gather by interviewing actual veterans is just kind of amazing. And, you know, take what you got in They Shall Not Grow Old and just, you know, ramp it up to 11 as far as that goes. And I think it's just much more coherent because they have time. And I think this is the best World War I documentary ever. That's the Great War TV series.
Thank you for those points and that recommendation. I'm sure I'll check that out. I love World War I from a perspective of being a war that we just, we feel like we know what it was about, but it's just such a strange war. There's a lot to kind of discover there. It's very surreal whenever I dive into looking at that war in a way that World War II is not. I mean, World War II is kind of an amazing study as well, but for different reasons. And I also think World War I is underutilized in gaming. I feel like there's things there, chemical bombs and trenches and stuff that we should use more in role-playing games as elements, as story elements. Next up, we have the Jeff Collier of Tome of All Dooms talking about interactive fiction. I think this was probably inspired by my run at trying to talk about early dungeon crawlers, and I sort of left out the whole history of Zork and Colossal Cave, the kind of computer interactive fiction, but I did talk a little bit about choose your own adventure style interactive fiction. And I am a big fan. I still have interactive fiction apps on my computer and still play them every now and then. And there are still people out there writing them. Jeff mentions that. I would suggest that one of the more interesting books I've seen on it is called Video Games for Humans. They're just more essays from people playing through games and talking about how they feel as they play through games. But they draw your attention to some interesting games too. There's one about a scarf that a person loses on the bus, and it's just this interactive fiction of kind of going through the different emotions, and that one's very lead you by the nose, right? There's not as many choices, but it's about experiencing it. I think I mentioned Horse Mastery before as a really strange game where you're growing and training these very strange horses that are extremely violent. There is one where you turn into a demon, I think. There's just a bunch of them in there that they talk about and talk about what's cool about them. And so if you're really interested in interactive fiction, maybe that is a book you might want to look into. I think you can read it free through Kindle Unlimited. Not sure about that. But all right, here's Jeff talking about interactive fiction.
Hey, Ray, it's Jeff. I was just had this thought. I meant to send it in earlier, but you were talking on one of your more recent episodes about interactive fiction, and I was just gonna holler at you that there's still lots of people developing interactive fiction. There's actually an interactive fiction archive and an interactive fiction database online, and one of them, I can't remember which, I think the archive holds a interactive fiction contest every year for people to submit new works of interactive fiction and text adventures. And that's been a source of some real gems of, non-commercial developed games. So that's pretty cool. Secondly, there's a rather new thing in the interactive fiction world. There's a program called AI Dungeon. And that is for both Android and iOS. They have an app. And it's basically an AI engine that's been fed a whole lot of fantasy and other fiction. And you interact with it like you do a text adventure, but the range of responses is a lot larger. And you can do things that you could never do in the typical verb, the noun type of text adventure interface. So that's pretty cool. You should check that out if you get a chance.
Oh yeah, AI Dungeon is amazing. I had discovered it some time ago, but I didn't think to talk about it on the air. So I'm glad you brought it up. Let's just give an example here. Actually, I saved off a transcript from the second time I played the game. So there's an initializing phase where it, you know, generates some stuff, and then you pick a setting and you pick a character type, and the choices are for character type, noble, knight, squire, wizard, etc. I chose young Darvin, who's a noble. I made up the name. Then it gives you a little bit of instructions, and then it starts generating story. So I'm just going to read you the transcript. It's not very long, but whenever I type something in, I'm going to preface it with input. Okay? You are young Darvin, a noble living in the kingdom of Larion. You have a pouch of gold and a small dagger. You are awakened by one of your servants who tells you that your keep is under attack. You look out the window and see an army of orcs charging towards your door. Run, you shout to your servant, as he runs off to find some place safe. I will fight them here. You quickly gather what possessions you can carry and run outside. Input. I choose my fastest horse and ride away. You gallop your horse towards the orc horde. The orcs are already upon you when you reach the edge of their path. You raise your sword and swing it down at the nearest orc. He screams in pain as his arm is severed from his body. Input. I fight my way through and escape. The orcs are not going to be able to follow you all the way back to your home. They are too numerous, and you are far too fast for them to catch up with you. You turn around and gallop back to your home. The orcs do not pursue you further. Input. Prepare the keep for attack. You quickly gather what valuables you can and set out to build a new stronghold. Soon you have a large wooden keep ready for battle. Input. Hire soldiers. You recruit soldiers from the surrounding villages and towns. Soon you have enough men to take control of the area. Input. And women. Recruit women soldiers. You recruit women into your army. Soon you have enough women to make up most of your forces. Input. We enforce equal pay. You implement an egalitarian system where men and women both work equally hard but receive different wages. This allows everyone to live comfortably. Input. Okay, but women make more than men. You realize that this is unfair, so you institute a quota system where any man who has children must give one of those children to a woman in need. This ensures that women will always have a place in your army. Input. Train the children to fight. You train the children to become warriors. Soon they are strong enough to defend themselves against the orcs. Input. We are Sparta. You are victorious over the orcs, and you are now free to rebuild your once great civilization. You have conquered the land, and you have a powerful ally in the form of the Empire. Input. We invite the orcs to dinner. You invite the orcs to dinner, and they accept. You enjoy a meal together, and afterwards you share a drink. Afterwards, you retire to your chambers and spend the rest of the night talking about the past. Okay, that'll do it for this episode of Plunder Grounds. Thanks for listening. I'm Ray Otis. You can find my stuff at www.rayotus.com. That's RAYOTUS. Big thanks to Logan Howard for my theme song. He does the Swordbreaker zine and podcast. And until next time, look out for those rust monsters.